Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, this Ticats general manager position has been open for so long. I'm wondering if either of you interviewed for the position and didn't tell me.
Well, Justin, I'm not leaking anything to Three Down Nation, which is how I'm actually planning to get a GM job one day. So you're not getting an answer out of me. Nice try.
I will happily do it for 10 cents on the dollar. So if anyone wants to hit me up, you got my phone number. Call me anytime.
Hey, there's a football operations cap now.
It's true.
It's been implemented if people didn't hear.
You're going to get what you pay for, but I will come in well under the football ops cap. I can guarantee you that.
You will definitely help in the global department, I would imagine.
So I got a list. If you want my list, you got to pay for the list.
We will get to that a little bit later in the show, but there are some juicy topics to dive into today, fellas. So let's get rolling. We're discussing the 2026 Canadian Football League schedule that was released, can you believe it, in December, not February?
The Argonauts shaking up their football ops department.
Saskatchewan, Calgary, and Ottawa making some key re-signings.
Some Canadian quarterback NFL news. Yes, people, get comfortable.
And Drake wearing a vintage Argonauts jersey. But first,
Trevor Harris, Davis Alexander, and Cody Fajardo signed contract extensions with Saskatchewan, Montreal, and Edmonton, locking Harris and Fajardo in through 2026 and Alexander in with the Alouettes through 2028. Which of those QB moves was the most significant?
It has to be Trevor Harris with the Saskatchewan Roughriders because they are the defending Grey Cup champions. And no, I'm not saying it because I've been on the pre and post game show for the last two seasons. If Trevor Harris does not come back to the Saskatchewan Roughriders and retires, that leaves a giant question mark at the quarterback position. Okay. We already knew that it was likely that Cody Fajardo was going to go back to Edmonton, and he did tell me specifically that he thought at one time after the season was over that there was a 75% chance that he was going to retire. But then he also admitted that, yes, he had a job offer from his school that he went to in the NCAA, the University of Nevada, to be an offensive analyst, but he did share that, you know, it's quite different than CFL quarterback money. So I think that changed the equation there. And he also told me that watching his exes, Saskatchewan and Montreal, playing the Grey Cup, motivated him to come back. So I'm here for the Cody Fajardo revenge tour. You know, he talked about how Edmonton beat Saskatchewan once in 2025 and felt like, hey, if they could do that in his first year in Edmonton, where he started midway through the season, what could they do in year two with him paired with Jordan Maksimek, the offensive coordinator, Mark Killam, and the rest? So I like the way that Cody Fajardo was talking from a sheer entertainment perspective. And then we knew that Davis Alexander was already going to be with the Alouettes for the long term. So that's why I believe Trevor Harris re-signing, continuing to play football, was the biggest move out of these three at the quarterback position. And I think his words held up to the financial details. He said once again, and told you, JC, that he felt like it was a team-friendly deal. And I think that it is just that, especially considering the salary cap jumped over $400,000 leading into the 2025 season. And CFLPA President Solomon Alamimian believes there's a chance it could go up leading into 2026. So when you look at this contract, $190,000 in terms of a signing bonus, $220,000 in base salary, $25,000 in marketing, just over $15,000 in housing, and a $5,000 travel allowance, that equals $455,300 in hard money. And yes, we get it right down to the exact cent. And then you look at, on top of that, he has the chance to earn $54,000 in additional playtime incentives at a rate of $3,000 per game for playing 51% or more of the offensive snaps. So this contract could top out at $509,300. I think for Trevor Harris, who just arguably had the best season of his CFL career and is coming off setting a Grey Cup completion percentage record at 85.2, and, oh, by the way, winning MVP in that game, that's a value deal for the Riders, and I think also a fair one for Harris.
Yeah, the quarterback, if I could pick any of these three quarterbacks to be on my team, which, by the way, could still be the Hamilton Tiger Cats if they want to hire me as their GM. But the quarterback that I would pick is Davis Alexander. That said, I also have him third here because he was already under contract with the team through 2027. I will say, I put my GM cap on this show about a month ago, and I said, I don't care if Davis Alexander signed through 2027. If I'm the Alouettes, I'm trying to extend him right now. And evidently, either Danny Machocha was listening, or him and I have similar GM philosophies. One GM to another, same philosophy.
Be paying attention.
Same thought, exactly.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Are you saying you're the Three Down Nation GM? You're just taking that title?
Hey, I got my eyes on bigger GM jobs than Three Down, Justin. Come on. But in all seriousness, good for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. We'll talk about Jermarcus Hardrick a little bit later in the show. But one of the things as a member of the media I'm always looking for is the proof in the pudding, right? It's very easy, especially during a playoff run, Grey Cup championship, for players to stand around the campfire, sing kumbaya about how we love each other. We're all going to come back and we're going to run it. And we love this place so much. It's Saskatchewan number one. It's another come actual contract negotiations to see who is going to live up to what they are saying, right? It's very easy in October, November to say all the right things. But when the bullets start flying for real in December, in January, in February, and all of a sudden you're not getting the offer you thought, or, oh, this guy got more money than me, right? Teams can turn on each other. Players can turn on each other. And that's why there are sometimes messy divorces, not just in the CFL, but across professional sports. So good for the Riders, good for Trevor Harris, good for Jermarcus Hardrick to, again, put their money where their mouth is, to actually prove that, yes, there was no smoke or mirrors or fluff here. This was real. We want to run it back in 2026, try to go back-to-back in Saskatchewan. However, I'm tempted to put Cody Fajardo in the number one spot. And the reason I say that is this. Edmonton right now has nothing going for it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is an organization that hasn't been to the playoffs since the pandemic. Like, the coach who last made the playoffs for them has subsequently been hired, fired, and then hired again by another team and gone to two Grey Cups with a win. Talking, of course, about Jason Moss. Like, this organization needs a face. It needs a leader, right? 2 years ago, it was like, we have our guy. It's Taylor Cornelius. And then last year, it was like, we have our guy. It's Trey Ford. And then this year, they're like, we have our guy. It's Cody. And just to have that actually, at least for day one, it's pretty clear, I think, at this point. We might talk about it a little later. It's pretty clear at this point, Trey Ford's not going to be back at Edmonton in 2026. But to actually give this team a face, give these fans somebody to look at who can have sustained success, right? Taylor Cornelius was not somebody who ever had sustained CFL success. Trey Ford, I think there's still a possibility that he could have sustained success in the CFL, but he hasn't done that yet, right? Cody Fajardo is a guy who's a Grey Cup winner. He's a Grey Cup MVP. Is he the flashiest quarterback in the league? No. Does he have the biggest arm in the league? No. Is he still a top running threat? No. But guess what? He makes good decisions with the football. He's a leader. He's seen every single thing you can possibly throw at him defensively. And he's somebody who can raise your floor. And the Edmonton Elks are not a team that has to go out and win a Grey Cup in 2026. I don't think that's really in the cards. But what they do desperately need to do is not win 5 or 6 or 7 games and miss the playoffs again. They need to get to the playoffs, and Cody Fajardo is a guy who can get them there, right? Saskatchewan has already been over the top, so it's great news to bring back Trevor Harris. But the Edmonton Elks need somebody to push them over the hump. And the only guy really available, unless you can go get Bo Levi Mitchell, which I'm not sure why Bo Levi Mitchell goes to Edmonton at this point of his career, unless you throw all the money at him. But right now, I think it's Cody Fajardo. So that's why I would put him at the top of this list, especially Justin, with you saying there was a 75% chance at one point he was going to retire. I know Trevor Harris kind of openly opined about his future, but I never got the sense he was going to retire. With Cody Fajardo, that felt more real. So that's why I'm opting for him.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, Hodge. You know, I love the Davis Alexander extension. I think it's smart business from the Alouettes, but is this going to dramatically impact their team next season? No, because he was already under contract. It's simply extending the status quo. And then when you look at the other two guys, I think if either Saskatchewan or Edmonton had lost their quarterback and they had gone to free agency or elected to retire, it would have created a really dicey situation where there's not exactly an attractive option on the open market where they could have gone and got another guy. So re-signing their current quarterbacks was essential. The reason why I put Fajardo above Harris is similar to the one that you laid out, Hodge, but I think it has as much to do with who is behind them right now in terms of Jake Mayer and Trey Ford, whether those guys are back, particularly in the case of Trey Ford, remains to be seen. But had Harris or Fajardo up and retired, those presumably would have been the guys at least for a time. And while Jake Mayer doesn't necessarily excite you as a starting quarterback, he's shown himself to be competent, and he's shown himself as a guy who can take a team to the playoffs. Certainly, if you bring back all of those Grey Cup pieces, that incredibly talented roster that the Saskatchewan Roughriders had last year, I think you still could have made the playoffs with Jake Mayer as your quarterback. At this point in his career, we have not seen Trey Ford as a quarterback who can consistently produce at a high enough level that can get you to the postseason. I'm not writing him off. He could do that in the future. He could prove it. He's still got upside. But right now, with the relationships there in Edmonton, how they've soured on him and what he's proven already, I think that's a steeper drop-off from Fajardo than it is from Harris to Mayer. That's why keeping Fajardo is more important for the Elks.
What was most interesting to me about all the stuff that went down here is the fact that Cody Fajardo represented himself in negotiations with Ed Hervey. And I tried to dive as deep as possible in the time that I had with him in about that, because I said, okay, if you're representing yourself, what did you use for a comparison? Like, it's, you know, well known around the league that agents are going to put the comps together for where they believe their clients should be paid. And Cody Fajardo was very open about it and said that he used Davis Alexander's now old contract as one of his comparisons. He also looked at Trevor Harris's most recent contract as well for a comparison. And Cody Fajardo told me that he terms his deal as team friendly. Now, as Hodge laid out, the proof will be in the pudding. Three Down Nation working to get those numbers, and you know we'll have them at some point. So I'm curious to see the intricacies of that deal. But can you guys imagine a contract negotiation with Ed Hervey as the potential franchise quarterback and what that would be like considering what went down last offseason with Eugene Lewis?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. I wouldn't want to go into a negotiation with Ed Hervey as the backup long snapper. But when you're the franchise quarterback and he's on the record and saying he wants you back, and Mark Killam, the team's head coach, is saying the only guy I want back is Cody Fajardo, right? Like, he's the only quarterback for me. But like, that does give you a lot of leverage. So I would be happy going into that negotiation with that type of ammunition, because if you bring not only the comparable contracts, but you bring some of the quotes, it's like, well, Ed, let me read this back to you. This is what you said in the media about me, and now you're telling me I'm not worth X, Y, and Z, right? Those are the types of things that you could do in those negotiations. So I wouldn't be too scared to go with Ed if I was the existing franchise quarterback who he was on the record saying he wanted back.
I'm sure that helps in negotiations, but really, when you're talking with Ed Hervey, the only leverage involved in that situation is the foot he'll put up your butt when he's unhappy with you, right? This is a guy who tells it like it is. He's not afraid to fire shots. I'm sure it got contentious at stages, not to a point that's going to alienate anyone, because a franchise quarterback is so important. But Hervey is not going to pull any punches. That's a guy who is willing to sit in an uncomfortable situation when it comes to hammering out the dollars and cents.
Seems like the term du jour, if you will, among these quarterbacks fellas is team-friendly deals. So is there pressure on Bo Levi Mitchell to take a team-friendly deal with Hamilton? Because let's be honest, all the other starting quarterback seats are full unless you're one of these teams that's going to do a swap. Like, you know, I think it should be mentioned, Drew Brown has a bonus due in January, so the Red Blacks could get out of that contract if they wanted to take a big swing at Bo Levi Mitchell. But if you're Bo Levi Mitchell, how do you balance that? Are you looking at team-friendly because the other guys are doing it and it worked for Trevor Harris to win a Grey Cup in Saskatchewan? Or are you trying to get as much money as possible because you're not sure how many more years you're going to play?
I can't speak for Bo, but I'm just going to try to put myself in his shoes and speak for myself. If I'm Bo in this situation, I'm honestly going in the opposite direction. I'm saying, look, you've got Trevor Harris off the market, Cody Fajardo off the market. At this point, who really can you go out and get? You're going to bring in Trey Ford as the guy. Trey Ford from Niagara Falls played collegiately at the University of Waterloo. Great geographical fit, maybe a star you could build around. But guess what? Not somebody who's proven. Not a two-time Grey Cup MVP, two-time Grey Cup winner, three-time All-CFL quarterback, and two-time CFL MOP. And by the way, just led the league in passing yardage and passing touchdowns. Back-to-back years, two-time East Division MOP. Reigning, baby. That's my resume. That's what I'm doing. I'm 35. I've got, you know, 3, 4, 5 good years left in me. You're going to pay through the nose, and it's going to be a 3-year deal, and there's going to be guaranteed money in 2028. And you want to know why? It's because who else are you going to go get? You're going to make Taylor Powell the guy? I think the Ticats, by the way, like Taylor Powell. But good luck selling to the fan base if I'm not back and you make Taylor the guy and he goes out and struggles week one. I can't wait. It's going to take about 4 seconds for the faithful in Steeltown to start chirping, saying, why the heck do we got this kid under center when we could have just paid Bo? So if I'm Bo Levi Mitchell, this is arguably my last chance to get paid. You've just played on team-friendly deals in 24 and 2025. I'm getting paid if I'm Bo in 2026, because at the end of the day, I think Bo is the one with the leverage. Who else are you going to go get if you're not going to pay Bo? And Bo then can set his price.
You hear that, Hamilton? If you don't hire John Hodge as your general manager, he'll go and be Bo Levi Mitchell's agent. Based on that logic, you don't want that to happen. But I think you're right to an extent there, Hodge. I've long been an advocate for quarterbacks taking a little bit less money in order to supplement the roster around them. I think that is smart in the long term if you're a guy who wants to win. And Bo has made lots of money in his CFL career. But if there was ever a time to get a raise that you deserve, and Bo deserves a raise, it's right now. Because as we've talked about before on this podcast, the cap went up significantly last year. That money wasn't necessarily used in standard contract negotiations at that time. Teams kept it in reserve. They were unsure about their budgets. They are using that money now, and the cap is expected to go up yet again. So there is a huge chunk of change out there that top-tier players can go and get, which isn't going to necessarily harm your team's ability to bring in other talent because you're not right up against the cap. So I was a little bit surprised to see just how team-friendly a deal like Trevor Harris's was. I think he could have reasonably gotten more money and still argued with the current cap that it was a team-friendly deal. I think if you're Bo Levi Mitchell, you've got to take that into consideration, and you can push the Ticats a little bit here and still get a deal that's reasonable for both parties while getting what you deserve.
Bo Levi Mitchell has made over $700,000 per year in his career, but those teams didn't necessarily fare well. I know that helped Bo Levi Mitchell's bank account. So I think him being the savvy veteran that he is will understand that. But on the flip side of it, and sort of to Hodge's point, Bo Levi Mitchell took a big pay cut going into the 2024 season And also, you know, in terms of that deal initially, was playing on a pay cut in 2025, because when he initially signed that three-year deal with Hamilton, it was a big-time contract for well over $500,000 per year. So I think he can sit there at the bargaining table and say, look it, I've taken pay cuts the last couple of years. I've thrown for over 10,000 yards. I have the accolades that Hodge laid out well. I know Scott Milanovich's offense inside and out. There's a good chance if I stay healthy, we throw for 5,000 again, and we're one of the top, if not the best offense in the Canadian Football League. So you need to pay me requisite with the other quarterbacks in the Canadian Football League. Like, I don't think $600,000 for Bo Levi Mitchell would even be breaking the bank. And you look at the potential for the top earners at the quarterback position, that would put him among them for 2026, but it wouldn't even put him at the top because Nathan Rourke is sitting there with $684,000 currently on that contract for 2026. So to me, that's an intriguing one because as Hodge laid out, there is a lot of leverage for Bo Levi Mitchell, but if you're the Ticats, does that leverage mean a lot to you in terms of, do you really see him leaving your franchise? Like, honestly, and I don't usually like to do this, but if we're going to speculate, and I think this is fun because it's what the fans do. If I'm the Ottawa Redblacks, I'm hoping that Bo Levi Mitchell gets to the negotiation window. That could completely change the complexion of your team, and you give Ryan Dinwiddie a Lamborghini to drive with in his first year with your franchise if you could get Bo Levi Mitchell there. And oh, by the way, those two happen to have a connection from their days with the Calgary Stampeders. So I'm not saying that's going to happen. It's just essentially some fun speculation. But I think Bo Levi Mitchell could use some things like that as his leverage. You go around, you look at some of the other quarterback situations in the Canadian Football League, and I think we get an idea. Davis Alexander, Montreal. Chad Kelly, Toronto. Zach Collaris, Winnipeg, Trevor Harris, Saskatchewan, Cody Fajardo, Edmonton, Vernon Adams Jr., Calgary, and Nathan Rourke, BC, that Ottawa is really the only other possibility. And that is even a question as well, because that's if they're willing to move off Drew Brown, who had an injury-plagued season there with the Redblacks. I think if you're Ottawa, that's a no-brainer if it happens. You at least have to talk to Bo Levi Mitchell and pick up the phone during the free agent negotiation window. But you would have to figure out the bonus piece with Drew Brown because his bonus is due before then. I believe it's mid-January.
Yeah, the timing of that is tricky, but I think you're smart to lay that out. And if you are the Hamilton Tiger Cats, I think you have to question, okay, well, how far are we willing to push then with Bo? Are we willing to hold at 450? Are we willing to hold at 5? Are we willing to hold? Because I think you also astutely point out, Bo was making 700K at one point. And that was when the cap was what, 5.2 million? Like the equivalent of that on a $6 million cap is close to 800 G's. And Nathan Rourke, as you laid out, isn't even close to that as the current highest paid player. So I'm not saying Bo should be asking for exactly what Nathan is getting. I think Nathan sets a solid ceiling. But my point is just, if I'm Bo, why the heck would I come back and play for 350? Bo Levi Mitchell is worth bare minimum, in my opinion, 500. And I think you could make a very good case. He's currently worth 600 or even that same 650 as Nathan Rourke. No, he doesn't have the Canadian passport, but the production is just as good. And oh, by the way, the Ticats finished first in the East Division this year. It's not like the last couple of years where this team missed the playoffs and Bo is now negotiating as somebody who, yes, had a great statistical season, but you know, this club didn't actually go anywhere. Right now, they are the closest they've been in a long time to getting to and winning a Grey Cup. They came very close to knocking off a really good Alouettes team in that East Final. So that's the way I see it. And I think, yes, if you have another team to use as leverage, in this case, Ottawa, why not? And at that point, if you're the Ticats, you can say, okay, well, if Bo's leaving for Ottawa, we've now got our pick of Trey Ford, Taylor Powell, Drew Brown, and it becomes a bit of a buyer's market for the Hamilton Tiger Cats, having the only open starting spot, which isn't necessarily the worst place to be, but I think you want Bo back. So in my opinion, Bo should not take a team-friendly deal. But again, obviously, I do not speak for Bo, and he and his agent are the ones who will have the final say, and deservedly so. It's Bo's life, it's Bo's career, and he should choose what he wants to do.
Just fun to kick around, though.
Absolutely.
The 2026 Canadian Football League schedule has been unveiled before Christmas, fellas. The season starts on Thursday, June 4th, when the Montreal Alouettes visit the Hamilton Tiger Cats. You got to wait a while, though, for the Grey Cup rematch all the way to week 19, Thanksgiving Monday in Canada. The Riders go to the Owls, and then there's the back end of the home and home set a week later in Regina. What are your takeaways from the skit?
I got lots of takeaways. First of all, and maybe this is unfair to say, but to me, like, schedule release is, it's like Christmas morning for CFL fans, right? And then inevitably, no matter what the schedule actually turns out to be, the reaction is like an 8-year-old opening up a big package of socks. It's like, oh, this is terrible. You know, it's like, oh, this is the worst. Every schedule before this has been great, and this one's terrible. And it's like, but last year on schedule release day, you said it was terrible, but now it was great, and the new one's terrible. So I feel for the CFL schedule maker to some extent. My initial reaction to there being only three games in week one and week two was, wow, this is trash and stupid. And then I was reminded, oh, of course, the World Cup is happening around that time. It makes sense to backload the schedule a little bit. That's fair. I thought there was a mistake made here in the Argonauts scheduling. Obviously, the Argos opted for 12 road games, essentially, in 2026, which is a separate issue. But I thought you should have scheduled... Go ahead, Justin.
I just said, I like the way you worded that. They did opt for 12 road games.
They opted for 12 road games. They did. And by the way, I love how on their actual schedule graphic that they released, which we'll talk about in a moment, how lame that was, but they actually had them listed as road games. I think there was a little asterisk that was like, oh, home game at another stadium. But like they're literally listed in the away color that they had on their graphic color scheme. But regardless, I thought that the CFL should have scheduled the Argonauts in Hamilton in like week two. At least that way, if you're a Toronto diehard, you get to see your team play in person easily without traveling far early in the year. As it stands, the Argonauts will not play at home. And by at home, I mean like actually at BMO Field until week 10. Right? It felt like a bit of a tap-in, to borrow Justin's hockey terminology, to just have them play golf in Steeltown in like week two. Oh, farewell golf. I've never actually gotten the ball close enough to the hole to tap anything in myself. I assumed it was a hockey analogy. The Thanksgiving Day shakeup's kind of interesting. We've established that on Thanksgiving, the Montreal Alouettes host the Ottawa Redblacks. That's been the case for the last 5 years. They've now changed that to the Riders. Personally, if I'm the Alouettes, I think it's a tap-in, to use the same term, to brand that as an official Thanksgiving Day game with some type of trophy. You can call it the Turkey Cup, the Coupe Turquay. I don't admittedly know the French word for turkey. JC, can you help me out? What's the French word for turkey? Do you know?
Deigned.
Okay, I'm not going to try to say that with the accent because I'll offend people. But the Coupe Deigned or the Turkey Cup, I think, is a great one. I know Cheval is horse. I don't know what turkey is.
In size bigger than the Jacques Dussault Cup.
Oh, God. That Jacques Dussault Cup is like 20,000 pounds. What are you talking about?
It's got to be bigger.
That's crazy. But again, I think it's interesting to change it up. I just wonder if maybe – like maybe the thought is our Thanksgiving Day game always does well, and also the Red Blacks visiting always does well, so we may as well shake that up. But I also think – the Riders visiting would do well. Like to me, you want to brand the Thanksgiving Day game as a game that doesn't normally, like, bring in an opponent that doesn't usually draw well, but whatever. The overlapping is interesting to me, right? We're used to having overlapping games during the preseason. I noticed that in the last week of the season, the last two games are going to be happening simultaneously. The Hamilton Tiger Cats and Ottawa Red Blacks play in Steeltown Saturday, October 24th at 3 p.m. Eastern. At the Edmonton Elks, the Saskatchewan Roughriders will start at exactly the same time. I confirm with the league that this was not a clerical error. It is happening. Why is it happening? I don't know. I know that come week 21, unless there's really big playoff implications for a game, I'm kind of checked out and just ready for the playoffs to start. Maybe the league feels the same way. I'm obviously speculating, but that was kind of interesting to me. And then in terms of buys, I took the liberty, and I have a takeaways piece if you want to read it in more detail up at 3downnation.com, but I took the liberty of checking each team's bye weeks and seeing which ones were the best. And in my opinion, if the idea is to have the most balanced buys, the team that's gotten the best shake of the stick is the Montreal Alouettes. Their buys are in weeks 5, 11, and 17, which means they will never play fewer than 4 or more than 5 games without a break, which to me seems pretty optimal. The team that probably fared the worst is Calgary. Calgary has a bye in week 2 and then a bye in week 21. So in other words, they play a game, get a break, and then they play every week from week 3 to week 11, get one break in week 12, and then play again from week 13 to week 21. They play almost all of their games with essentially one break in the middle. Not optimal, but it's an interesting thing to look at, the schedule. I like schedule release date. We'll talk about the release videos in a bit, but first I want to give you guys a chance to offer your takeaways on the schedule.
I was fairly impressed by the schedule. It's a year that is less than ideal in a number of ways because of the World Cup, and that creates certain limitations like you laid out. Having just 3 games in the first 2 weeks of the season feels wrong, and your initial reaction to it is that this is a bad idea. But when you think about the fact that that means you're playing against less World Cup games, that you can more easily front load the buys for Toronto and BC to make it a little bit easier for them when they're having to go on the road and aren't able to be in their home stadium, it makes a lot of sense to construct the schedule that way. And I think they generally did a really good job of handling those challenges. There's nothing here that jumps out to me as absolutely horrid or an offense to any individual team. I think they struck a really nice balance, and it should be noted that in terms of the games that we do know are being played by Team Canada in the World Cup for the round robin, they only go up against one Team Canada round robin game on the same day. And the timing of those games means that they will not overlap, or at least will not overlap significantly. That's a really good thing.
There's no overlap at all.
Well, maybe it goes to double overtime, or there's a weather delay. You don't know it's that for sure, Doug.
Not called double overtime in soccer, but I digress.
No. Yeah, soccer is called fall down until the referee calls a penalty.
Could be a weather delay. I don't know how long soccer games take in the World Cup. I don't watch it. Anyway, they will not overlap if everything goes to plan, which is a good move by the CFL. I don't know if they had all the information that they were able to do that by design, or if that was just a happy coincidence, but that is a good move by the league, and I think it works out really well that the schedule is constructed in this way. For me, the biggest takeaway of this entire thing isn't in the regular season or the playoffs. It's in the preseason. Because if I look at our article here, Friday, May 29th at 7 p.m., Hamilton at Toronto. You've got in brackets here, Hodge, in Guelph. What an idea. That's really unique and innovative. Somebody should think of doing that more often. That's my favorite 2 words in this entire thing.
Drinking and driving is a decision that will change your whole world. Things will never be the same once you get a DUI, because legal fees and time in court are just the beginning. Getting into a crash is another way your world could be irreversibly changed after drinking and driving. Your vehicle may not be the only thing that gets damaged in that crash. You could face a life-altering injury or even death. But you're not the only one who could face those consequences. Your decision to drink and drive could permanently change someone else's world, whether you injure them or leave their loved ones grieving. The next time you're out drinking, call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or a designated sober driver. Always plan for a safe ride home. The only decision that'll change your world for the better is the decision to call for a sober ride. It's never worth it to drive drunk. Don't risk it. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Are you saying that because I played there?
No, I'm saying there because Toronto should be playing on the road. They should be playing in Guelph the whole time. They're already doing it once.
I'm just messing with you. Okay, since you brought it up, I've heard that the Argos could be spending more than just training camp at Guelph, which begs that question even further. How are you not playing even just one game there? Like, the setup alone, I think the proper fire number is just over 9,000 people in terms of how many people you can have at Alumni Stadium based on its current setup. And it wouldn't take much to boost that up, fellas, with some extra seating around there. So when Keith Pelley says publicly, which I can't believe, that he's explored all options, the proof just isn't in the pudding there, okay? To put it in a nice term. I think it's disrespectful to Toronto Argonauts fans, especially if you're going to spend more time in Guelph or use it as your pseudo home base for the first part of the season, even after training camp. What jumps out about the 2026 schedule to me, the quadruple header, boys. In week 15, the first one since 1995. I saw some people complaining about this, but I think it's unique and it could be cool. Now, let's see how it turns out in the grand scheme of things. But, you know, I was told that when you're looking at the schedule as a whole, okay, first of all, yes, everybody knows about the World Cup, but a team like, you know, the BC Lions, JC, you know this well, they only have a certain amount of dates that they can get access to BC Place, for example. So that throws, you know, a wrench, so to speak, into the schedule as well. And there's all these different iterations. So I think this is actually cool, where it could be something that you build some branding around, like CFL Day in Canada, because it literally is, and it's coast to coast. Like, I don't talk about hockey too much, but there's a hockey day in Canada where there's hockey games on throughout the day, and hockey fans don't complain about that. They try to have the Canadian teams playing either against each other or in all of those games. So I don't really see what's wrong with this. I think it could be actually really cool. And if the CFL and its teams get behind it, it's a great marketing opportunity to have sort of a tent pole in that one day. So I'm interested to see how that's going to go. And to be quite honest, fellas, when I first found out about this schedule, which I was told the teams had actually prior to Grey Cup. So kudos to the league, the head office, Stuart Johnston, all the people involved for getting it done, because we know how long that dragged on last off season. I think the schedule wasn't announced until, was it after free agency, fellas?
It might have been, actually. Yeah.
Or leading into free agency. I'll leave it to Statboy Hodge to look that date up exactly. But I think they deserve some credit because they took a lot of flack last year. And the fact that the teams knew about the schedule before Grey Cup gives them time to prepare, you know, what they're going to do, how they're going to unveil it. Toronto Argos, that was an absolutely sorry excuse for a schedule reveal. I guess that goes along with you deciding to play 12 road games as well. It really shows you how much you're putting into your team. But when I saw the schedule at first, or heard about it at first, let's say, I was like, how do you not have the Riders playing in the opening week, the defending Grey Cup champions? But the more I thought about it, I think it's actually going to work well that the Riders open their season at home in week two to create even more hype. Like, you have the opening of the season, the three-game week I don't necessarily love, especially because the World Cup games won't have started by then, but, you know, I get it with stadium availability, all the rest. But to have the Riders at home in week two, and not only at Mosaic Stadium with the Riders, which will create enough buzz in and of itself, but to do it against the BC Lions, they beat in the West Final. You had Trevor Harris not wanting to talk about Nathan Rourke, and then Nathan Rourke scoring a go-ahead touchdown, yelling, "It's our time, it's our time," to the packed house there. I think that's a rivalry that's building and is great. So kudos to the schedule makers for putting that one there. I really think that is a game that can be a jumping off point for the season. And, you know, other than that, it's a schedule, right? Some people are going to like parts of it. Some people aren't going to like parts of it. It's what happens every year. But there are some unique things, I think, that go along with the 2026 campaign.
Admittedly, I don't like the quadruple headers, and I don't really get to experience it anyway because the Banjo Bowl is always on this date, so I'm always covering a game in the middle of it. That being said, I think the idea of branding it as an official day is brilliant, and I would even suggest that, you know, whether it's in Quebec, whether it's in Ontario, even the AUS, wouldn't it be fantastic if there was a morning game somewhere and there was a U-Sports element to this that could be included in the marketing? Like, hey, if the first CFL game starts at 1 p.m. Eastern, you know, is it possible? I know that it's not optimal timing for a number of reasons, but like, would Western and Laurier possibly be able to be scheduled for 10 a.m. Eastern? Could we get that game on national television?
No, like, that's early, bro. Let's just call it CFL Day in Canada. I think if you want to lead into it on Friday, perhaps you could have a double header that goes into the marketing. But playing at 10 a.m. in the morning, bro, I don't know about that.
Well, saying 10 a.m. in the morning is redundant, but I get your point. You could
just have UBC play somebody at 10 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah.
Bleed into the next day.
Well, I mean, I guess that's possible. BC plays at 10 p.m. Eastern time at BC plays. So I guess, yeah, you could go to Thunderbird Stadium after that. Heck, why not? And then when that game is done, then have like a 5 a.m. Eastern game out in Acadia. Like, just keep it going. Round the clock Canadian football for 24 hours. Yeah, why not? But yeah, let's talk about those schedule reveal videos. So I ranked all nine. Nobody asked for this. And I decided still I'm going to rank all nine schedule release videos. Schedule release videos have become very popular across professional sports. It's an opportunity to create something really iconic and unique that can go viral across social media platforms. And though it obviously costs some money to produce this type of content in-house, a lot of teams in this day and age, this attention economy that Stuart Johnston loves talking about, the digital age in which we live, a lot of teams have these type of people on staff, creative types who can make this type of unique content. And if you have something that ends up getting shared and seen tens, if not hundreds of thousands of times, right, you'd have to pay thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars for that type of marketing. So a great way to essentially market your team is just create something really cool that fans will share of their own volition. So you don't have to pay a third party entity to advertise your product. So the Argonauts decided to make a graphic that just shows all of their games. There was no video. This is the same thing they've done for at least a couple of years now. And honestly, it's super lazy and unacceptable for 2025, but whatever. I didn't care for Saskatchewan's. It was just a bunch of B-roll that they threw on there. And it looked really nice. The shots were great. The best part for me was outtakes from some commercial and ad reads that Kian Schaefer-Baker was doing. And at one point, he got so tongue-tied, he like fell to the turf and he was laughing and he's like, I quit. And I laughed out loud. I thought it was really funny. But it wasn't like unique. It just kind of felt like, hey, we've got lots of footage from our Grey Cup year. Let's slap it on there, make it look nice. It's not a bad video, but it's not as good as some of the other ones. I had Calgary at 7. Calgary is a very nice video done by Chelsea Drake, the team's horse rider. She's got a beautiful property out in Alberta. She's got some very cute dogs and cats and some beautiful horses. But I didn't think that this was mean-spirited enough. I think part of the schedule release video is a chance to roast your opponents. And Calgary didn't roast the Elks. Weirdly, the Ottawa Redblacks super roasted the Edmonton Elks. I don't know why Ottawa's roasting Edmonton and Calgary's not. That seems backwards, but whatever. Nice video, but just not punchy enough. Hamilton's was really well done. They had a title sponsor. I mean, from like a technical standpoint, it's really well done. But again, not super punchy. It was less than a minute long, and it was themed around bowling. I kept waiting for like a bowling Bo Levi Mitchell tie-in, and there wasn't one. I don't know why they were bowling.
This is what the direction you get if you hire John Hodge as GM.
There you go.
He's in all elements of the organization. He's making sure the puns hit in the schedule release video.
Thank you. The double entendre's got to be there. Bo Levi Mitchell. I know he's not under contract for next year, but regardless. Number five, I had Ottawa. Big Joe, their mascot, was in his workshop. My favorite part of this video was him playing with different toys that represented each team. I'm not sure why a rubber ducky was used for the Toronto Argonauts, but like he had, you know, a little toy bird for the Alouettes, etc. And then for the Lions, I guess they were unable to source a toy lion, so they opted for a DVD copy of the 2008 film Madagascar Escape to Africa that Big Joe then scribbled out all the characters but the lion and then circled it a bunch of times. I thought it was one of the most bizarre creative decisions I've ever seen in my life, but I laughed my ass off. I thought it was so weirdly funny. It tickled my sense of humor. Number four, Edmonton stepping up their game. Elk Talk, obviously a clear takeoff on TikTok. I thought some of their digs at other teams were really, really clever. I like that they tapped into a bunch of online trends. The only thing I thought was weird is they made fun of what they called the Toronto accent, which is really just a very generic, like, hockey accent. There's lots of people in Southern Ontario who talk like that. I don't know anybody from Toronto who talks like that, but maybe I'm wrong. Justin, do you know a bunch of people who sound like they're from what are those Letterkenny or what's the other one? I can't remember.
That Shorzy? Doesn't happen so much in Toronto,
yeah,
but
that's
I know
what I'm
the way Don Cherry used to say it, Toronto.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I don't really get that joke, but whatever. The rest of it was really good. Alouettes were number three. Isaac Adeyemi Berglund, non-Quebecer, but spoke a ton of French in the video, which I thought was great. He was hunting. The image of random people wearing camo snowsuits with like opposing team gear on top, like jackets and jerseys and stuff, and then running in the snow with Isaac Adeyemi Berglund pelting them with paintballs was hilarious. Really liked it. I liked how violent it was. That made me laugh. Number two, I had the BC Lions with their lion detector. Nathan Rourke featured heavily in this one. I really liked how he had some self-deprecating jokes. I think poking fun at oneself, as we all do on this show all the time, is always good. It makes it less mean-spirited when you make fun of other people, which we also do with each other on this show all the time. One of my favorite jokes was when Jackson Finley sat down. Jackson Finley and Nathan Rourke look a lot like each other. And when Nathan Rourke stumbled into the video and obviously made the joke about the testers mixing up him and Jackson, he said, quote, "You guys thought I was Jackson again? What are you, Farhan Lalji?" And I'm like, great, we're making fun of TSN too. Like, I think this is healthy, right? It's all in good fun. It's not mean-spirited. I thought that was great. And some of the jokes, again, were pointing at Nathan. Some of them were him at other people. It was great. But the number one has to be the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Literally making an entire playable single-player retro-style video game. I watched the full video, and then I played the game. Some of these jokes, guys, unbelievable. Like, when you play against the BC Lions in this little game, the special item is a snowplow, and then the little text box pops up saying, oh, opponent can't handle the cold, you know, minus one penalty. Or like you go to the Hamilton Tiger Cats level and it's like, oh, you found a gold ring, but it's old. It must be from the 90s. It's like, we're now making fun of the Grey Cup drought there. The only joke that didn't super hit for me was the Calgary Stampeders. The special item was a box of cereal, which is a reference to the terrible nutrition grade.
How did you not like that?
Well, here's the reason why. The Stamps fixed their nutrition in 2025. They got a terrible nutrition grade in 24. They got roasted by a bunch of former players who were complaining about cereal for breakfast, and the Bombers made fun of it.
Bro.
Well, they made fun of it in their schedule release video last year, which was great. 2025, the Stampeders paid the money. They got the same food for their players the Flames get. And though the PA report card is not out, I think the Stamps are going to do way better. So to me, I would have liked the Bombers to make something new or find something new to tease about the Stamps, make fun of for the Stamps, right? You could joke about them choking in the West Final, though granted the Bombers kind of choked in the East Semifinal, so maybe that's something that you don't want to poke fun at because you're
the West Semifinal, you mean.
Sorry, I misspoke. The West Semifinal in BC. So, but regardless, It was the best one.
You could have had a clock in there and just nobody paying attention to it.
Exactly, right? Bingo. Bingo. I also thought they should have roasted the Riders. And look, the Riders just won the Grey Cup on Winnipeg's turf, and they deserve all the credit. The Riders are number one right now. There's no doubt about it. But, like, I was expecting the Bombers to do some type of dig, like, oh, we've got 10 Grey Cups, you've got 5 or something. Like, there's still things you can poke fun at, right? Or, like, hey, your quarterback is old. Like you could, there's still things you can tease, right? Granted, Zach Collaros is also relatively old. But I would have liked them to do something with Sask, but regardless, their roasting of other teams was so funny. Oh, some of the things that these players were saying, like when Nathan Rourke's character attacks you in the game, it yells, "It's our time! It's our time! It's our time!" I was like, "Oh my god, how did they do this?" Like, this is the Toronto Argonauts level. It's like no head coach minus one speed. Now the Argonauts do have a head coach, and it's somebody the Bombers actually wanted to hire as their OC, reportedly. But still, like, so funny. So original. I can't wait to see what they come up with next year.
Yeah, this is the standard now. I think the Bombers are rightfully on top because of the interactive element. But when you look at the Lions and the Alouettes and some of that comedy, the effort that goes into creating a video like this in pro sports in the year 2025, going on 2026, that is the expectation. If you're not doing that, you are falling behind. And right now, the Toronto Argonauts are in 1995. Like, they've just figured out how to use a graphic design. Like, that's unacceptable. You got to step up your game, and you've got to come up with something creative and actually put some time and effort into it.
The Argos are going to be looking around BMO Field, you know, when they have these home games eventually, and be going like, I don't get why nobody's here playing 12 road games. The schedule comes out. We just have a generic graphic. Like, you know that sad graphic of, like, no, I think it's a GIF. Guys, like, just looking around to an empty room. How would you put effort into it?
You're telling me there's not a single video person on MLSC's staff that could have spared a day to film something with the Argos? Like, you know what the teams are. You don't even need to know the schedule yet. And you're going to play the same 8 teams. Like, you can film this stuff in advance and have it ready. There are people that are under the employ of that organization that work with the other teams and produce great video content. It does not have to be a huge time-consuming endeavor. It's unacceptable that they couldn't put something together.
Hodge, your breakdown was awesome. To be quite honest, my favorite part of the Bombers video game was the cereal box. I thought that was cool. Just fit the video game vibe. I get that you're saying that it's an old thing, but it just fit the video game. And full credit to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers staff for doing that. That's elite. Mm-hmm. As JC laid out, that's the standard. And no, Hodge is not just praising the Blue Bombers because he lives in Winnipeg, everybody. Okay, lay off the guy. If anybody out there with an opinion looked at these video releases, and we can't even include the Toronto Argonauts in there because they didn't make a video. Okay, there's the Argonauts and then there's the video releases. There is no doubt that the Bombers was the best. The fact that it's an actual playable video game, like, CFL fans have wanted the Canadian Football League to be involved in a video game. And I get you won't actually play football, but the Bombers went out and were like, yeah, we're just going to make one that's actually really playable. Like, unbelievable stuff from the Bombers.
Well, and, like, honestly, if you're the Argonauts, we'll talk about them in this next segment too, but, like, at least get pinball on camera. Like, pinball is one of the most energetic, camera savvy, media savvy people out there. Why not just have a video, even if it's just 30 seconds long, of like, boom, you know, Toronto Argonauts 2026, we're ready to get back on top. The schedule's out today. These are our home games. Like just a quick message to the fan, right? It would take 10 minutes to set up that shot, and Pinner could probably do it in one take. Like,
10 minutes? You can film it on your phone, bro.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, I'm saying like a really nice shot somewhere in the office, like, not a lot of effort. And even that is just something, right? And you could put it on not just your feed on, you know, the artist formerly known as Twitter, but you could put it on Instagram, you could put it on your YouTube, you could put it on TikTok, you could put it like literally everywhere, you could put it on your website. So like, it's not like shooting a video is just for one platform. You can put it everywhere in between all those platforms. It's like, boom, that's 100,000 hits that we didn't have before this. And it cost us, again, essentially no money, right? You don't have to do the crazy big project. Like, just do something. Because I agree, it's not even like they got the worst grade of the 9 teams. It was like they did not complete the project, and then this is the grade that the other 8 teams got.
Argo's got to go to summer school to pass John Hodges' schedule release class.
And they can do summer school at BMO because there's nothing else going on there. Well, I guess there's the World Cup.
Actually, they kind of technically are going to summer school because they're going to be at Guelph for a while.
That's true. Take some classes while you're on the campus. Let's go. All right. On a completely separate note, Three Down Nation has reported that assistant general manager John Murphy is no longer with the Argonauts. Toronto, in the meantime, has hired Jim Barker as the team's director of player personnel and John Huffnagel as a senior advisor. JC, what has gone on in the Six?
Credit to your reporting, Hodge. Murphy was on an expiring contract and was informed that he's not going to be renewed and brought back for next season. Now, it should be noted, I have spoken to the CFL, and they confirmed that there was an investigation made into claims that the Argonauts tampered with Saskatchewan Roughriders head coach Corey Mace and reached out to him regarding their head coach position. That investigation, I've been told, has concluded, and per the league's policy, they will not discuss whether any punishments were laid out or what the results of that investigation were. It's unclear if that had anything to do with why Murphy is not back with the Argonauts or if these two events are connected. What we can say is this was a 5-13 team last season, and it's completely reasonable that the Argonauts would want to shake up their front office. They clearly needed some help there, as we've discussed on the podcast before, and I think Huffnagel and Barker give them some much-needed help in the personnel department.
Let's focus on Jim Barker, because I've been told that he was reasonably close to going to the Hamilton Tiger Cats, and the Toronto Argonauts sweetened the pot to get him there. So Jim Barker, you know, had been out of the league, had done some stuff with TSN, although not in 2025, had two teams coming after him, and the Argos get him to come in the building. He obviously knows Pinball Clemens well. He goes, you know, way back with John Huffnagel from their time together in Calgary. Seems crazy to think that that was that long ago, but anyways, it's a long, long time ago. So Barker's in the building. I think that it's definitely going to be intriguing to see what he does. It's a much different landscape in the Canadian Football League from when Jim Barker was, you know, at the controls as a general manager back in the day. And I think he's going to be doing a lot of GM type duties there in Toronto. So that's one that I'll have my eye on.
Well, and I appreciate that Jim elected not to take the Hamilton job, because that means I still have a shot, right? As we've talked about many times on this show. The other thing I'll say is I think this is a good hire for the Argonauts. Jim Barker is somebody who has seen all of it, right? Between him and John Huffnagel, these guys have got like lit. I think they've got 10 Grey Cup rings combined, and they've literally got over 50 years in professional football. And I think that's just off the field, not even including what John Huffnagel obviously did on the field in over a decade as a CFL quarterback back in the day. So for a team like, I'll put it this way. There are up and coming GM candidates in this league who, when you talk to people around the league, do great work. Kyle Carson, assistant general manager with the Saskatchewan Roughriders, is one of them. Another one is P.Y. LeVere, who is in Montreal, whose last name I hope I said right, who people talk about has done tremendous, great work. Those two teams were obviously in the Grey Cup for a reason. And obviously they've both got two very good general managers, head coaches, all that. But it's the team around these people that often makes them successful. The issue with hiring a young first-time general manager like that is typically they want to bring their own coach, their own supporting cast, right? People they know. The beauty of somebody like Jim Barker is he can come in and say, first of all, I have worked with a lot of these guys, or I have been in this organization before, but also there's nothing new that I haven't seen, right? There's not any learning I have to do on the job, right? Because when you become a GM, you become a head coach, there's always things, even if you've seen other people go through them, you have to go through them yourself for the first time. The Argonauts were not in a, we're going to rip this thing to the studs type of modality, right? Yes, they lost Ryan Dinwiddie to the Ottawa Redblacks, but they promoted from within for their new head coach. I think there's going to be significant pieces that are retained on that coaching staff. And obviously Pinball stayed on as the GM. So they were not in a, let's blow this all up and go with a brand new unproven regime. They were, let's find a couple of veteran pieces to supplement what we've got. And obviously Huffnagel and Barker are perfect fits if that is your goal.
Yeah, I sometimes get the label as somebody who hates on old people on the show because I'm the young guy. And I think there is a valid complaint out there when you see somebody like Barker get hired that this is just a retread. Like, it's not new blood in the CFL. But if you're the Toronto Argonauts and you're so depleted in the front office, the experience that he brings is incredibly valuable. And the other thing I want to highlight is if you're trying to rebuild a front office, there is perhaps nobody with a better track record of finding and developing young CFL scouts than Jim Barker, right? When he was GM of the Argos from 2011 to 2017, he hired Chris Rossetti, he hired Curtis Rukavina, he hired Vince Magri. All three of those guys are in the NFL now with positions. Let alone all the guys that he hired who have jobs elsewhere in the CFL. When we talk about the talent that was drained out of Toronto from a front office perspective and has gone elsewhere, a lot of that was put in place by Barker. So if you want to restore that, well, bring Barker back. And I think he's shown that he can take some people under his wing, or he can find the right talent evaluators to potentially restore what was lost over the last couple seasons with the Argos.
It's proper for us to make sure we're balanced, because it wasn't that long ago, fellas, that I believe all three of us were banging on the Argos for not replacing the talent drain that JC alluded to. But clearly, they've had a mandate to go out and do it in the offseason with the moves to bring in Huffnagel and Barker. And your point about that, JC, in terms of the young talent that he brought in is absolutely valid. And, you know, people are going to start drinking because I'm going to talk about Guelph, but Chris Rossetti was my backup quarterback at Guelph, and Curtis Rukavina played linebacker with me at Guelph. And those guys will tell you that, you know, Jim Barker is a hardline negotiator. He demands a lot, but he also, when it was earned, allowed those individuals along with Vince Magri to grow. And I think that they would credit him, at least in part, for giving them the opportunity to be there. Like, I believe, if I'm right, all three of those guys ended up becoming assistant general managers, or essentially did that role before they left for the NFL, and are on tracks to potentially get high-ranking front office jobs in the National Football League. Like, for example, Curtis Rukavina was featured in the Hard Knocks during training camp with the Buffalo Bills. They're talking about the entire roster, and he's sitting right beside Brandon Bean. So that's the level that we're talking about when you go all the way back, as JC astutely pointed out, for Jim Barker to give those individuals opportunities. Now, does it mean that everything Barker touches is going to turn into Canadian scouting gold? Not necessarily. But I do think that that is part of his resume and his past, that he's shown he's willing to bring young people along, and especially young Canadians in the Canadian Football League. So I think for many reasons, that's why it's an intriguing hire. And it should be noted, too, that Jim Barker, for people out there that love him or hate him, is a professional. He acts and carries himself in a very professional manner. And I think that's something that the front office with the Toronto Argonauts could use an infusion of.
Well, and we should also mention Ted Gavaya, a guy who got his first CFL personnel job under Jim Barker. And of course, then went to Winnipeg, got them to five Grey Cups in a row, or helped get them to five Grey Cups in a row, winning two. And then, of course, the time he leaves is when the Bombers can't win a playoff game. right? I'm not saying there's direct causation there, but the point is where Ted is gone, he's won. And the first person to get him into a personnel role was Jim Barker as the director. With Ted was the director of Canadian scouting with the Argonauts in 2011 when Barker was the general manager. And by the way, JC, you poked a little bit of fun, or at least mentioned like Barker's older, Huffnagel's older. Wouldn't that be the basis of an amazing schedule release video being like, hey, I'm just sitting here with my friend John and we're sitting down for a 5 o'clock dinner before The Price is Right comes on. But first, we got to talk about the CFL schedule.
The Price is Right's on in the mid morning, bro. And a 5 o'clock dinner is not a usual time for an older person's dinner, from what I understand.
It is, isn't it? That's a thing. Old people eat dinner, early.
That's a thing.
The dinner special.
Earlier right than 5 o'clock, though.
What? You think
old people eat dinner
at
like 4 or 4:30? Yeah, or sometimes even 3.
I don't know if 3, but fair enough. You're giving me notes. Fine. I'm just sitting down for a 4 o'clock dinner with my friend John before Matlock comes on TV. But first, we've got to talk about the CFL schedule for 2026 and how excited we are to be a double blue, right? It takes 10 minutes to set up that shot, shoot it, and it would have been hilarious, especially because, again, self-deprecating humor always sells, always sells. So something, you know, poking fun at your age, the same way that, again, everybody likes to see people poke fun at themselves, would have been great, and didn't happen. But anyway, I digress.
I'm just shocked that the Indianapolis Colts haven't reached out to John Huffnagel about being their next quarterback. He's right in their age bracket, right?
What a complete He's also a grandfather. Joke, to be quite honest. You call up Philip Rivers, who's in his mid-40s, to come
a
and
grandfather.
Quarterback. Yes, literally. And you got guys out here, and I'm not just saying his name because he's Canadian, but like, you know, Taylor Elgersman and a whole bunch of younger American quarterbacks too. And you think your best shot is Philip Rivers? Like, the CFL takes a lot of flack for being a retread league. Like, come on, NFL. That's awful.
I took the liberty. No one asked me to do this, but I took the liberty of putting together a list of former players who are younger than Philip Rivers, and I'll take the liberty of we're going to get to JC's random necklace in a moment, but I'll read you some of these names. Players who are younger than Philip Rivers include Darian Durant, Travis Lule, Nick Lewis, Ricky Foley, Chad Owens, Chip Cox, Jovan Johnson, Andy Fantuz, Maurice Leggett, Adarius Bowman, Weston Dressler, SJ Green, Odell Willis, and Solomon Elamimian. Now, just off the top of my head, Lewis is in the Hall of Fame, Cox is in the Hall of Fame, Owens is in the Hall of Fame, Fantuz is in the Hall of Fame, Dressler's in the Hall of Fame, Green is in the Hall of Fame, and Elamimian's in the Hall of Fame. Lule, you can make an argument, should be. Foley, probably not. Johnson, you can make an argument. Bowman, you could probably make an argument. Leggett, probably not. But like, the point is, half of these guys are not only so far retired that, you know, we don't remember them in recent memory as players, but they're already in the Hall of Fame. Like, that's crazy. That's crazy.
Speaking of old retreads, it's time for JC's random neglister. I'll keep this one brief because a name popped up on the neglist wire this week from the BC Lions that I think you guys will recognize. That's running back Peyton Barber from Auburn. Does that ring a bell to either of you?
Admittedly, it does not. But
well, Hodge, you're clearly not in the weeds of the NFL enough, because Barber played 6 seasons down south for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Washington Commanders, and Las Vegas Raiders. He racked up 2,457 rushing yards over that time. Not a bad career. And in his peak in 2018, he had 891 yards in a single season for the Bucs. He was a legitimate starting running back. The catch? He's 31 years old, and he hasn't played football in any capacity since 2021, gentlemen. But the Lions added him to their neg list this week. From my research, he's currently booked himself a slot in the World Series of Poker after winning a celebrity tournament. That's what he's doing these days. But teams don't waste neg list spots. If you're putting on a guy who's been out of football this long, it's because there's some fire underneath all that smoke, and there's some conversations happening. Somebody has heard from somebody that Barber might be interested in making a return at 31 years old. That would be an interesting one to see in the CFL.
I mean, it sounds to me like he's well-rested, if nothing else. So we'll see. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2012, Edmonton promoted longtime receiver and scout Ed Hervey to the role of general manager. 3 years later, he led the club to a Grey Cup win when his team defeated the Ottawa Redblacks by a score of 26-20, as it was then known, Investors Group Field. Hervey was dismissed by the team in April 2017, which remains maybe the weirdest timing ever for a GM firing. You're firing your GM in the middle of the spring, okay? Finishing his tenure with a 44-35 record, though he returned to the role last offseason in Edmonton after GM stints with the BC Lions and Hamilton Tiger Cats. How wild is it that Hervey has had four separate shots to be a CFL GM, and yet he's still only 52 years old, Justin?
It's insane. There are longtime personnel evaluators in the CFL who would like one opportunity to be a GM. And Hervey's gotten four. I'm not saying he hasn't earned it, but he's been pretty fortunate throughout his career. And you create some of your own luck, too.
And he can still play in the NFL if he wants to, because he's not quite – he's not a grandfather, I don't believe. So he's still younger in spirit than Philip Rivers, if not in age.
There you go.
Let's go to the three-minute drill. Hamilton and Burlington entrepreneur Angelo Paletta has joined the Hamilton Sports Group as a minority owner. Okay, Marwan Hage, now Paletta. Does that mean the Ticats are making some Skrilla?
I mean, I am dubious of the claim that, oh, 8 out of 9 CFL teams lose money. Oh, 7 out of 9 teams lose money. I'm not saying that many teams make money. What I'm saying is that nobody truly knows what's going on with the privately owned teams in the CFL, for sure, outside of them, who, of course, keep those as closely guarded secrets. What I will say is I think it's extremely positive that so many people are buying into the Hamilton Tiger Cats and doing so as people who are of that community, right? Local, stable, strong ownership wins. The Tiger Cats have come close to winning the last little bit, obviously in 2025, having a great season, 2019 getting to home Grey Cup, 2021. It's only a matter of time before that leads to a Grey Cup victory. Jamarcus Hardrick, who wants to play till he's 40, Philip Rivers out here saying that's rookie numbers, has re-signed with the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for 2026. How good has he been in Ryderville?
When he's been healthy, he's been exceptional. Sometimes when guys win most outstanding offensive linemen, it's a bit of a reputation award. That was not the case this year with Hardrick. He was the best lineman in the league, bar none. Canadian QB Curtis Rourke is practicing with the San Francisco 49ers for the first time since being selected in the 7th round during the 2025 NFL Draft. Is there any chance he plays this season?
There might be a slim chance if there's a rash of quarterback injuries with the 49ers, but what this is about for Rourke is getting on the field and taking what he's learned in the classroom and putting it into actual action to be ready for the offseason activities with San Francisco after rehabbing from his re-torn ACL. Lucas Cormier and Clark Barnes signed contract extensions with the Ottawa Redblacks and Calgary Stampeders, respectively. How significant are those moves?
Super significant. These were guys I both considered, honestly, putting on my top 50 list, not because of what they've done, but because they're both Canadian and what I think they're going to do. Lucas Cormier started 6 games for the Redblacks this year, needs to get a little bigger, but he's only 25. Clark Barnes, same thing, 25 years old, has started a bunch of games, shown some explosiveness. If you want to earmark a couple of guys as potential breakout, most outstanding Canadian nominees, not yet, but maybe in 26, 27, I think these are two guys you need to know if you're a CFL fan. The Ottawa Redblacks signed a 300-pound ball carrier named Jelani Stafford. JC, how the heck does this guy fit onto a CFL roster?
Well, he's going to play defensive tackle. That was his primary position for the Yukon Huskies. But in 2023, this guy was a phenom in short yardage, scoring 6 touchdowns for Yukon. And he was a damn good high school running back as well. At 265 pounds, He went back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons in high school. I say give him the rock. Let him run the short yardage. What could go wrong? The Hamilton Tiger Cats have interviewed Brock Sunderland for their vacant GM job. Is there a legitimate chance he gets hired?
There is a chance. I think the actual title would be to be determined, and it should be noted the Ticats have spoken to Brock Sunderland multiple times, so people out there, do with that what you will. Henry Burris has been named the acting head coach, not interim, acting head coach at Florida A&M University. How significant is that for Smiling Hank?
I think it's great, and I think they're using acting interchangeably with interim here. Jamie Colsey, the team's incumbent head coach of 2 years, went 12-12 over two seasons with the Rattlers. This is a perennial FCS powerhouse. This is a team that expects to win conference championships every year. Expectations are very high. So I don't know at this point if Burris is going to be a candidate for the full-time role, but what is clear is he's obviously the guy they've tapped. After getting rid of Colsey, I believe this team has a bowl game left, and after that, they're going to have to make a long-term decision whether they want to keep Burris in this role or hire someone else. The Saskatchewan Roughriders have re-signed short yardage quarterback Tommy Stevens through 2027. Is that a big deal?
Well, that depends. Do you think converting first downs every single time you send out your short yardage unit is a big deal? I think so. This guy's automatic. Great re-signing. Canadian QB Taylor Elgersma had another NFL workout this week, this one with the Chicago Bears. Is there any chance he signs an NFL contract this year?
I think there is a chance. And, like, you know, to be honest, I know we're railing on Philip Rivers, but if you're the Indianapolis Colts, Daniel Jones is going to be out for a long time. Who knows what's up with Anthony Richardson? In all due respect, you're going to probably run Brett Rippon out there to be your starter this week unless Rivers can jump in there. How do you not bring in Taylor Elgersma as a developmental guy there? Like, there's some of these situations in the NFL with regard to quarterback that I just can't comprehend. So I do think there is a chance that late in the season, a team can bring him in with a forward-looking mindset and say, hey, this guy has a wicked arm, great pocket presence, very accurate. He's somebody we can actually develop instead of just going with these, like, long-time backup and third-string quarterbacks that don't have the upside that Taylor Elgersma clearly has in his arsenal. Drake recently wore a vintage Argonauts number 19 jersey. What did you think about him repping the old-school double blue?
Admittedly, I don't care about Drake at all in any capacity. That said, this jersey brought me back to my youth when the Argonauts had that sick shield Argonaut logo that they would wear on the shoulder pads. And often it was like big 90s shoulder pads. So like the size of like extra large dinner plates with the logo popping. That uniform is sick. I would love for the Argonauts. I think their current look is great. I really do. But I would love for the Argonauts to bring back a retro style look of that at some point in the future. It's now old enough that it's officially retro. It's officially vintage. I would love to see a throwback game between the Argonauts and another team dressed like it's the 1990s. That would make my inner child extremely happy. Referee Andre Preux told Three Down Nation reporter Pablo Herrera Vergara that the replay center made an error on a call late in the regular season during a game between Calgary and Edmonton. What did you make of that?
It was great to see the transparency from Preux here, and I'm not surprised that he criticized this call, but his explanation that the touchdown should have stood because everyone thought the whistles had blown did not make any sense to me. That ball should have been at the 1 yard line if you don't think it's a fumble recovery. So I think Preux might be as wrong as the replay center here. McGill Athletic Director Jeffrey Phillips told the school's Board of Governors that the turf at Percival Molson, where the Alouettes play, is in dire need of repair and will cost $1.75 million to replace. He also claimed the turf is in such bad shape it has needed to be repaired mid-game at times during CFL contests. Do you believe that?
I'd love to see the evidence of that. And that's all I'm about to say, because sometimes what I've learned about people in universities, They do more finger pointing than anything else. I'm not saying that's what's going on here.
Ooh.
But have we actually seen during a Montreal Alouettes game the turf being repaired in the last number of years? I can't remember it, at least on the broadcast.
I would love to see, after like a big impressive scramble, like Davis Alexander's like, hold on, folks. And he reaches into his sock, pulls out some needle and thread, and just starts going to town on the turf, getting all patched up. That'd be amazing.
That's what I'm saying, man. Show us the evidence, okay? I just don't understand some of this stuff sometimes. Ontario Pokey Wilson has re-signed with the Blue Bombers through 2028. He was already under contract through 2026, so he tacked two more years on. How key is that for Winnipeg?
It is key. I don't think Pokey is a number one receiver in the CFL. He hasn't shown that, but I think he's a really good number two. Clearly, this team still needs a Kenny Lawler type, a healthy Dalton Schoen type to be that number one. But if you can find that, whether it's on the free agent market or through the scouting market, Pokey's a great two, Dembski's a great three. You're well on your way to really reinvigorating that receiving core, which frankly wasn't good enough in 2025. Luc Brodeur-Jourdain has stepped away from the Alouettes after almost 20 seasons as a player turned offensive line coach. Will the Alouettes miss him?
I'm sure they will. When you have that much success after that long a tenure with an organization, become a fabric of a franchise, him stepping away will certainly draw some tears, I'm sure, from people who've worked with him for a long time. The Hamilton Tiger Cats have re-signed Jamal Pierce through 2027. Is that a smart move?
Definitely a long, rangy corner who knows how to get his hands on the football. And I believe was among those tied for the CFL lead with six interceptions in 2025. A smart re-signing for Hamilton to get done defensively.
We thank you as always for listening, watching the Three Down Nation podcast. For Justin Duncan, JC Abbott, I'm John Hodge. Don't forget to subscribe to the Three Down Nation newsletter. If you do, Justin will personally hand you a check for $1 million. And for legal reasons, that was a joke. This is not anything you'll get paid for, but please still do it. Newsletters are good, especially ours. It's great. It's the best newsletter. It's the best newsletter that's ever newslettered. It's great. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. Thank you. We'll see you next time.